So we'll review the last points that we discussed in brief. Text 155. When a devotee hears about the affairs of the devotees of Vrindavan, he begins to covet a particular type of devotion. When such covetousness is awakened, one's intelligence no longer depends on the instruction of Shastra, logic, or argument. So here, Lord Chaitanya discusses transcendental covetousness or greed. Greed is not dependent on fear of violating scriptural injunctions, nor is it based on obligation to follow scriptural injunctions. Nor does the candidate consider whether he's qualified or not. He just desires to develop the mood of some of the eternal associates of Krishna. And he somehow or other wants to develop it. Somehow or other. But when he wants to fulfill his greed, he thinks how to fulfill it. And in order to fulfill it, he will again approach the scriptures or some spiritual master or Vaishnava who can help him to reach the goal. Just like we gave the example that if someone wants to taste rubbery, he will approach someone who will tell him how to get it. How to get a cow, how to feed the cow grass, how to milk the cow, and ultimately how to get the rubbery. So Raganuga Bhakti is not independent of scriptural instructions, but the impetus for following the instructions is changed. The impetus is greed. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami says that such greed can be obtained only by mercy. Either the mercy of God or the mercy of Raganuga Vaishnava. There's no other way to get greed. The mercy of the Vaishnav may be from the past life or from the present life. If one received the mercy of some Raganuga Vaishnav or spiritual master in the past life, then in the present life, greed will manifest and he will seek the association and guidance of the spiritual master who can help him fulfill the greed. And if one did not get such mercy in the past life, but by associating with the spiritual master, he can get greed in the present life.
Maharaj, where did you get this information?
From Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. You are? Different places. Different places.
It's not very satisfying.
I mean, come to me after the class and I'll tell you. Then how do the scriptures tell us to execute Raganuga Bhakti? Here we have some verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita, some of which are quoted from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or contained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When we discuss in text 158 and another in 160. Krishna smaram janam chasya preshtam nija samihitam tat tat kata kritas chaso kuryad vasam vraje sada. Krishna smaram. One should think of Krishna. How should one remember Krishna? One should remember the Krishna as he is loved by the devotee whose mood of devotion one covets. For example, if one wants to develop the mood of service of the gopis, he will remember Krishna standing at Vamsivat, smiling, very beautiful, playing the flute, glancing here and there, seeing if the gopis are coming, and so on. If one wants to develop the mood of Mother Yashoda, one will remember the form of Krishna as Bal Gopal, crawling on all fours, stealing butter, making the floor marked with his lotus footprints, smeared with butter. Catching hold of the tail of cows and being dragged through the mud. Or if one is desirous to develop the mood of the cowherd boys, he'll remember Krishna tending the cows in the forest, how Krishna sits like the center of a whirl of a lotus at the time of lunch, how he takes the prasadam in his hand, sometimes the sweets drip through his fingers, and so many pastimes. Krishna smaram janam chasya. One should remember Krishna and also the devotees dear to Krishna. So if one wants to follow in the mood of the gopis, he will remember Krishna and his pastimes with the gopis. How Krishna is looking here and there, thinking, when will Srimati Radharani come? And one will think of the other associates, like Lalita and Vishakha, and especially Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari, whose mood of service we covet.
A devotee who's not on this level might try to cultivate remembrance of the pastimes of the Lord and that type of meditation. What would be different between that type of remembrance and that type of meditation and this type of meditation?
The difference is that one type of meditation is based on scriptural injunctions and the other type of meditation is based on spontaneous greed.
How would the meditation of the less advanced devotee be based on scriptural injunction?
Well, if he doesn't... Oh, you're saying that the person has greed?
No.
Well, if he doesn't have greed, then it's based on scriptural injunction, that he'll read in the scriptures that that the form of Krishna is the best, or the service of the gopis is the best, and therefore, based on the statements of the scriptures and the acharyas, we want to concentrate on it. So concentration that's based on scriptural injunctions is not as strong as the meditation of one who has spontaneous greed. So here remembrance is emphasized. Then tata kata ratascaso. And he will be very attached to talks about Krishna and the beloved devotee of Krishna whose mood of service he covets. So here again, the same three main processes are important. Remembering, hearing, and chanting. But here again, the person will be impelled by greed, and the subject will be specific. Krishna and pastimes with devotees whose mood one desires to have. Kuryat vasam vrije sada. And he should always live in Vrindavan. Either physically or mentally. The question may be raised that if in one's mind one is always living in Vrindavan, then why shouldn't he be living in Vrindavan with his body also? If one has duties outside Vrindavan, he may not be able to live in Vrindavan physically, but at least he should live there mentally. Which means that he will have to have some visits to Vrindavan so that he can know what to remember when he's not in Vrindavan. And Krishna will make arrangements. Krishna is always eager to get the devotees back home, back to Godhead. So he makes arrangements for them according to their desire and qualification. Earlier in the discussion of sadhana bhakti or vaidhi bhakti, we discussed the verse in relation to sadhu marg anugamana, following the path of the devotees or the acharyas. What happens if someone doesn't follow it? Can anyone remember the verse?
I did it nicely.
Someone else then.
Shruti Smith, Guru Nanak, Hunter Trika, Dimna, Aikan, Dipiyahara, Dhiru, Dayayak.
Yes. Translation.
Devotional service, which is not rendered according to the Shruti, Smriti, Puranas, or Pantarajiti, is a disturbance in society.
Yeah. Devotional service that is performed without regard to the injunctions of the scriptures simply creates disturbance. So we come back now to text 153. Lobhe vraja vasira bhave kare anugati shastra yukti nahi mane raganugara prakriti. If one follows in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan out of such transcendental covetousness, he does not care for the injunctions or reasonings of shastra. That is the way of spontaneous love. So we have to understand this properly. He follows the shastra. If someone has greed, he follows the shastra for the sake of fulfilling the greed. not because he's worried about following the Shastra. Then again, we have read that Raganuga Vaishnavas don't follow the injunctions of the Shastras very rigidly. So what does all of this mean practically? In the items of devotional service, 64 items, some are more important than others, like the 5 items listed at the end of the list, and also the 3 items, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that if one gives preference to certain items of devotional service at the expense of other items, there is no fault. The example is given in the 11th canto of the person. It said that if the devotee closes his eyes and runs forward towards the goal without looking to either side, he will not stumble or fall on the way, but he will reach the goal. And Lord Chaitanya also explained that even if one just follows or concentrates on one of the 9 processes of devotional service, he can attain perfection. So, when the devotee begins the practice of Raganuga Bhakti, he will distinguish amongst the various items of sadhana bhakti. Some of the items are related to his mood of service, and they will actually fulfill his greed, especially chanting, hearing, and remembering, as mentioned in text 160. Also, serving the spiritual master. Some items are related to one's mood. Some items are not directly related, but they are favorable. Like observing a codicil, or celebrating Janmashtami. On the occasion of a codicil and Janmashtami, we will take the opportunity to chant and hear about Krishna more. Which will be favorable. And on the other hand, if we neglect to observe the fast on Ekadasi, we will commit offense, which will disturb one's progress in devotional service. Then there are some items which which are not especially favorable, but they're not unfavorable. And there are some items which are unfavorable. Unfavorable means unfavorable to one's particular mood of service. For example, the scriptures recommend to meditate on Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. But if one is trying to develop the mood of service in Vrindavan, then meditating on the pastimes of Krishna in Dwarka will be unfavorable. Or one item is to worship Krishna's queens. Here also the worship of Krishna's queens will be unfavorable to the mood of service in Vrindavan. So, if one neglects to perform some of the items in preference to others, there is no harm or no offense, as long as one performs the essential items.
Is it harmful on the inviting bhakti platform? I understood that injunction applied to inviting also.
It does.
Yeah.
But it does apply in Vaidhi Bhakti also. But in Vaidhi, nothing is unfavorable. None of the items of Vaidhi Bhakti are unfavorable to Vaidhi Bhakti. But some of the items in Vaidhi Bhakti could be unfavorable in Raghunuga Bhakti. But even within all of the items of Vaidhi Bhakti, some are more important than others. And so one can give presents to the important ones. And the schedule, the program that Srila Prabhupada has given us includes the most essential items, and it doesn't include some of the lesser items. Like worshiping the cow. Or, worshipping the banyan tree. Whereas service to Tulsi Devi is certainly favorable, even in Raghunuga Bhakti. So the worship of Tulsi Devi is included in the regular program.
So in other words, in the Vaidhi Bhakti platform, we shouldn't, without the direction of Prabhupada, eliminate different angas, different processes. On the plea of that verse from the camper that you were describing?
No. Because anyway, everything is based on surrender to the spiritual master, a service to the spiritual master. So at no stage can we disobey the orders of the spiritual master.
But he's making that
program. Like one of the items which is not favorable in Raghunuga Bhakti is mudras. They do all these things. So it's not included by Srila Prabhupada, but it's included in Vaidhi Bhakti. And devotees have adopted them. So no harm in Vaidhi Bhakti.
Another example could be about worshipping Ganapati. Why should we begin the worship of Ganapati?
Yeah, it's an example of an item that's mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the worship of Ganapati. And it's also one of the items that Srila Prabhupada didn't specifically introduce in ISKCON.
I remember one letter where he said, if you can spend $100,000 a month to the Lord, you can worship the mission. Somebody else is interested in doing that.
Mark, these different items that you mentioned, one of them about meditating on cleaning the forehead, is that what it helped for us to do something? Or is that?
That's not one of the 64 items.
That's in the Archana Padati. For worshiping of the being, you're supposed to do certain meditations, and that's one of them. So if you exclude that, as I understand what you said, if you exclude that, in Radha Mulavati, it will be better for your Radha Mulavati, but if you include it, it will be harmful. Right? That's what you mean?
Unless you're meditating on being clean.
Exactly. If you're, and you said in the world, the inhabitants will be happy.
So here we're talking specifically about Braja Bhakti, Braja Loka Anusara, following the residence of Vrindavan. Now, here's a good question. Suppose I don't have greed, but I'm worshipping Radha and Krishna in Vaidhi Bhakti. What will be my destination if I attain perfection?
In the Garga Samhita, there's a description of Braj Vaikuntha. The Rama and Krishna are there, but they're there in the mood of queen, king and queen. And the devotees worship them in that mood, in an opulent mood, although they worship in Rama and Krishna.
Yeah. They go to Vaikuntha. But there's a part of Vaikuntha called Goloka. Or there's a part of Goloka that's Vaikuntha. And there, Radha and Krishna are worshipped in opulence, as one worships Lakshmi and Narayan, with awe and reverence.
Contribution of ecology.
No. Okay, wait a minute. Wait till we're finished. Now, suppose one worships Radha and Krishna with greed, but is afraid not to omit any of the items of Vaidhi Bhakti, and therefore follows all of the items of Vaidhi Bhakti, even the ones that are not favorable. In other words, what someone worships Radha and Krishna, but has greed, but worships them by Vaidhi Bhakti. What is his destination?
That's Dwarka.
Yes. He goes to Dwarka. He goes to Dwarka. And if one worships Radha and Krishna with greed, by Raganuga Bhakti, then he goes to Vrindavan. Dr. J.
You said that we're trying to get back to our eternal original position, serving Krishna. So if we have that original position, then it's either in Vaikuntha or in Gorakha or in Vrindavan. So how does if you don't develop that greed, it seems like then you have to have then you, it seems like in order to be Vrindavan, if that's your eternal position, then you have to get that greed. So if you don't get that greed, you go to Vaikuntha, or do you get a chance to get that greed so you don't have to be in the position?
Good question. Good question. Well, we know from Brihad Bhagavatamrita about Gokumar that he actually had the seed of Braja Bhakti. Somehow or other he went to Vaikuntha. But in Vaikuntha he was not satisfied. Although for periods of time he would experience so much pleasure and ecstasy and service to Narayan that he would forget everything else. But sometimes there would be some feeling inside of him that he was not satisfied. He went to Ayodhya even. He went to Dwarka even. But still he wasn't completely satisfied. So finally his spiritual master advised him that he should come back to earth, to Vrindavan, and engage in devotional service again there. And then intense feelings of separation would bring him to Goloka Vrindavan. But this is an exceptional case. Generally, one's position in the spiritual world will be arranged while he's in the material world. And because Krishna is kind and the Vaishnavas are kind, they want to show mercy. They want to give mercy. So nothing to worry about.
Isn't it arranged prior to coming to the material world, and then it's just rediscovered in the material world? You know, it's guiding the person aware of how to direct that person so that you can reestablish that position.
Could you repeat the question?
In other words, you were saying that the arrangement for one's destination in the spiritual world is made while the person's in the material world. But my question is, isn't it?
The means are provided. The means are provided.
Of course, but that's based upon the position before the came to the material world. Right, I mean, he was in his position prior to falling into this mind.
Okay, now, there's a premise in your question which does not necessarily have to be accepted to give the answer. The premise is that we were already established in some relationship with Krishna, and then we fell into the material world. So you're saying, now we're in the material world, we just have to return to our original position in the spiritual world, which is generally the way that Srila Prabhupada preached. But there are also some statements even in Srila Prabhupada's books to the effect that someone can't fall from Vaikuntha. And you might be aware of some discussions on the subject. Or
I'm not trying to...
So what, let me just establish the fact that we accept that every living entity has a seed of an eternal relationship with Krishna, or the Swarup. And that when the seed is watered, it will sprout, it will grow leaves, it will produce flowers and fruits and everything. So, whatever Swarup is manifest is already contained within the seed that we accept. But whether the seed or whether the plant was already full blown in the past and due to some reason it only exists in the seed now, or whether the plant was never full grown in the past but only the seed existed, doesn't change anything in practice. You understand?
Of course, the verse Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kavanaya would indicate that it's full blown, that it's covered over. Doesn't it?
Maybe it's too big of a discussion. I'm not so aware of these other discussions that you mentioned.
In that, on the same subject. So I think we can drop it. You know, the same verses are often quoted by different people to support different claims.
If a devotee follows the course of Raghunuga Bhakti to perfection, do they then become Ragatmika devotees, or do they remain Raghunuga?
They become Ragatmika devotees.
In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, they only use the term, but in our nectar of devotion, and the Prabhupada only uses Raghunuga. I can find Ragatmika in the nectar of devotion.
But you found it here in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
How they describe Ragatmika is described as Raghunuga in nectar of devotion.
True.
So how can you support what you just told Raghunuga?
What did I just tell Raghunuga?
Well, you make a clear distinction between Raghunuga and Raghunuga. The Raghunuga rises to the level of Raghunuga.
The distinction is right here. Raghunuga Bhakti followed in the wake of Ragatmika.
I've seen it here, but I can't balance it, the nectar of devotion with this. I have trouble with it. You know, how can I understand it? The definition of Raghunuga Bhakti is just what you describe Raghunuga and Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Come to me after class. I'll explain. Okay, last question, because we have to go on.
This is a question regarding Ashya. You said that in the state of Raghunuga Bhakti, there may not be good service in that. But we know, for example, Sanatana Goswami, when he met this person who was dealing with Madan Mohan as he was just one of his little boys, and Sanatana Goswami was kind of upset. And we also know the whole Hari Bhakti Lasa is based.
Okay, you have to listen carefully when we speak. I didn't say anything about the process of deity worship in general. I spoke only about the item of this mudras. You know mudras? Only mudras, nothing else.
But as far as I remember, you also do mudras.
They may do it here in the Krishna Balaram temple also. We're discussing philosophy. We're not talking about what other people do. They may smoke beedies also. Well, what does that have to do with the philosophy?
The point is how I just try to understand how...
We should... Okay, there's a question. There's a good question here. And that is who to follow. And the answer is we should follow Srila Prabhupada, and we should follow Rupa Goswami. And their followers, strict followers. Okay? Yes?
Can you forget that you just said, when I read about the fact that the Raghunuga Bhakti are not becoming instructors, and in order to understand how they are to work, I just try to find out the reason in the fact that externally they have to serve the mission of the individual. So externally they will follow in the way in order to serve the goal and teach me.
Yes. Like Srila Prabhupada preached, like Rupa Goswami preached. She's saying that Raghunuga Bhakti is performed internally and externally. And externally, we serve as devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as servants of our spiritual master, the previous acharyas. So that we did discuss the other day, that as Rupa Goswami did, as Srila Prabhupada did, externally we should also do.
That's what we said just before, that you don't follow the scriptures, you don't follow like the injunction of...
No. He follows the scriptures. He follows the scriptures. But in Raghunuga Bhakti, the purpose for which he follows the scriptures is specific. That he has greed for some mood of service to Krishna. And he follows the scriptures for that. Just like, I'll give an example, I don't know if it's a good example or not. Someone reads in the scriptures that he should protect cows. So he keeps a cow and protects it because the scriptures say that one should protect cows. Someone else has greed for milk. So he gets a cow and he does everything that the other one does, but he has some specific purpose that he wants to get milk. So they both do the same thing. But the mood is different. Okay, now one last point, very important. Text 162. Or 163. Lord Krishna, as Kapila Dev says, my dear mother, my weapon, the disc of time, never vanquishes those for whom I am very dear, for whom I am the super soul, the son, friend, spiritual master, well-wisher, worshipable deity, and desired goal. Since the devotees are always attached to me, they are never vanquished by the agents of time. So here we find different ways of pursuing the Lord and different ways of serving the Lord. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yayatam mam prapadyante, he reciprocates according to the devotee. Now we have discussed a little bit, but I'd like to discuss one time more precisely about the difference between Aishwarya and Madhurya. Generally, Madhurya means sweetness and Aishwarya means opulence. And the difference between the mood in Vrindavan, the mood in Dwarka, or the mood in Mathura, the mood in Vaikuntha. So the mood is there in Krishna and the mood is also there in the devotees. Sometimes Krishna is described as omniscient, and sometimes Krishna is described as bewildered. For example, in Nectar of Devotion, there's one example that one time when Krishna saw Srimati Radharani, he became so bewildered. He tried to milk a bull instead of a cow. So, or When Mother Yasoda lifted the stick, Krishna became afraid and began to cry and tried to run and hide. So many examples of Krishna in Vrindavan becoming bewildered. But there are also times when Krishna shows his majestic feature. For example, when Krishna was just 3 months old, he killed Putana. And Putana was so so ferocious that she used to steal babies and drink their blood. And she was so powerful, she was stronger than 10,000 elephants. But still, when Krishna sucked her breast, although she tried to push Krishna away, she couldn't do so. So this is God's opulence, strength. But still, his mood as a child was not disturbed. He still remained as a child, sucking her breast, and even after she died, he was just crawling on all fours. So there's Aishwarya in Vrindavan also. But the Aishwarya is never able to disturb the mood of Madhurya. Especially when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and held it up for 7 days. All of the residents of Vrindavan could see it. And after the incident, some of them actually approached Nanda and Yashoda and said that your son is not an ordinary child. He must be some demigod, or maybe an incarnation of Narayan himself. So you should not chastise him. You should not threaten him. You should not tie him with ropes. You should not lift the stick to him, and so on. Now, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda also saw Krishna lift Govardhan Hill. But they just felt proud as parents that my son is so powerful. Even if they thought he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still, they thought that he's my son. And therefore, I have to chastise him if he does wrong, I have to punish him and so on, I have to feed him and everything else. There's so many examples, wonderful examples. For example, there's another verse that when Krishna would return from the pasturing grounds with the cows and the cowherd boys, the demigods would gather in the sky and shower flowers and sing prayers. So the cowherd boys saw it also. Everyone saw it. But still, they thought Krishna is our friend. So their mood of affection was not disturbed by Krishna's opulence. And if there was no opulence at all, then what would be the difference between Krishna and any ordinary child? So Krishna does manifest his opulence in Vrindavan. And the devotees see the opulence. But their mood of service, their intimacy, their intimate relationship is never disturbed. In Mathura, there's both Madhurya and Aishwarya. But the Madhurya can be shaken. It can be displaced, actually. Just like after Krishna killed Kamsa, Vasudeva and Devaki stood up and began to offer prayer. And they said, you're not our son. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the view of Krishna's godly opulence, they were ready to abandon their intimate relationship with him. Same with Arjuna. When Krishna showed the universal form, Arjuna said, oh, I thought you were my friend. I see you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I've committed so many offenses. Please forgive me. So there's both. In Mathura, it's more equal between Madhurya and Aishwarya. And in Dwarka, it's more Aishwarya and less Madhurya. But there's some Madhurya there. Just like in Arjuna's dealings with Krishna, where he says, take my chariot between the two armies. He commands Krishna. Or Satyabhama orders Krishna, you you've got Parijata flower for Rukmini, what about me? Oh, I'll bring a whole tree for you, don't worry. So there is. But the proportion is less. And Krishna also the same. Generally in Vrindavan he forgets that he's God. But sometimes when there's need, when there's some demon or something, for the sake of his devotees, he remembers the fact that he's God and kills the demon. But mostly he's under the control of the love of the devotees. And in Dwarka, generally, he's always in control. But sometimes he will also appear to be bewildered. And he will call Uddhava and ask him, now what to do? I have to go to kill Jarasandha. The seed of affection. There's attachment which goes by two names, Rati and Bhava. The Supreme Personality of Godhead comes under the control of such attachment. And this is ultimately how Krishna comes under the control of the devotee. And when Krishna comes under the control of the devotee, he forgets that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So
Buddha
said that he was fully balanced on Krishna. So was that completely dependent on Krishna, on the will of Krishna. Krishna, if the gopis are dependent on Krishna,
well, they depend on Krishna and Krishna depends on them. What's your question? They can't live without Krishna and Krishna can't live without them. It's reciprocal.
In the case of Lakshmi Devi, who wanted to enter a relationship but was not or has not been able to yet, it's not described that she would be patently unable to, but just that she somehow or other didn't sort of understand how to do it properly. And as if, you know, if she did finally understand, then maybe she could. So I was just wondering what that means. If that's a correct understanding, which it may not be, then what bearing would that have on you? Like the idea of the seed of attachment? Or just what about that anymore?
He says that according to Srimad Bhagavatam, Lakshmi performed severe austerities for many centuries to get the association of Krishna and Vrindavan, especially in the Rasa dance, but she could not succeed. So why could she not succeed? Because nobody can enter the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan without following the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. And here, the gopis enter the rasa dance. So to follow in the footsteps of the gopis, she would have had to give up her swarup as Lakshmi. She would have had to give up her four hands. She would have had to get married to a cowherd man. She would have had to cheat him and sneak out in the middle of the night to meet Krishna, which she couldn't do. It was too much for her. So Raghavir Prabhu's question is that if at some stage she were able to follow the process to enter Vrindavan in Krishna's Rasa Lila, then what would happen to her swarup as Lakshmi?
Yes, if the idea is there that there's a seed of a particular type of relationship, but this is now another type of relationship.
Yeah. But Lakshmi is not Jiva.
No, but that's true.
She's not limited. Like Narada also, even Narada, he has different forms. He's in Swarga. He's in Vaikuntha, he's in Dwarka.
If you say Lakshmi is not Jiva, then how do you classify?
She's a Lakshmi. She's an expansion of Radharani. Radharani is the original Lakshmi, and all of the other Lakshmis are expansions of Radharani. So when, actually 1 hour is not enough. 1 month is not enough. It's ludicrous. When Lord Chaitanya discussed the same subject with Venkatabhatta about Lakshmi and the fact that she couldn't enter Rasalila. So Lord Chaitanya, in order to pacify Venkatabhatta, said that actually there's no difference between Lakshmi and Radharani. And therefore Lakshmi also enjoys the company of Krishna in the form of Radharani. So this raises one more point, which I should mention. When the Raganuga Vaishnava attains perfection, what is his destination? Because he can achieve prema, up to prema. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes the stages from Shraddha to prema. But to enter Krishna's pastimes, one has to have more than prema. There's sneha, mana, pranaya, bhav, anubhav, rag, anurag, bhav, and mahabhav. And specifically to enter Krishna's pastimes as a gopi, one has to have mahabhav. So the acharyas have explained with reference to the scriptures that the person will not be transferred immediately to Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual sky. But he will take birth, and especially if he's a gopi, she's a gopi. She will take, just at the time of death, she will see Krishna and Krishna's associates, and her swarup will be fully revealed. Everything will be fully revealed. And then she will have to take birth in the womb of a gopi in Vrindavan. And in the association of the eternal associates of Krishna, Srimati Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha, Rupa Mandari, and so on, she will go higher and higher up to Mahabhav, And then when she comes to the stage of Mahabhava, she can well, of course, she's growing up. She starts as a small girl and she's growing up. And then she can also meet Krishna. Because anyway, she has to have parents, she has to have a husband, she has to have in-laws, she has to have so many things. And she'll get those by taking birth in some planet where Krishna's pastimes are being manifest. And then when she has all of those things that she needs for Parakya Ras, then she can go to Goloka Vrindavan. Gaur Premanandi.